Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games. Brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock.
And I'm Michael Gray, the head writer of O-Rock.
So, Michael, I usually start this podcast with, you know, a little of like the most basic of icebreakers. How you doing, Michael? I have a different question for you this month. Are you ready for this?
Oh boy, yeah. Let's see it. Are you going to challenge me to bring a refrigerator over to your house?
Somebody is still bitter about playing my old game Life in the Dorms the other day. I can see. No. And we'll talk about that. Don't worry. No.
I like that puzzle. That was a good puzzle. Yeah, let's hear your icebreaker, though.
Do you know what episode number of the podcast this is?
No idea.
It's episode 50. We've made it all the way to episode 50. Can you believe it?
Wait, have we been doing this for how many years? Five?
Just about 5 years. I was looking it up. Our first episode was in September of 2016. Wow, what a time to start doing things.
That's okay. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder about podcasts in general. How often do people go back and listen to the old content? It's like, who's going to be listening to the teenage years of the podcast if we're on the 50s now?
I think it's especially interesting with a podcast like this where we're, or interesting is definitely not the right word, but where so much of our stuff is just like, here's the problem I'm working on this month. Do you have a way to fix it? I don't know how interesting that stuff is now, let alone 5 years from now.
Well, I mean, people be wanting to hear all the behind the scenes and learning how we struggled.
Yeah.
Whatever game we came up with 5 years ago.
That's true. Oh man, I should make like alternate edits of the podcast where it's like, here's all the parts where we talk about the making of Cat President 2, and then like release that as just like a making of audio documentary in the game itself.
Oh, that sounds great.
Like a lot of work.
Yeah, no. Oh, I wasn't gonna say a making of in the game. I just thought,
yeah,
that would be podcast 51, and now we don't have to do anything for the podcast.
That's cheating. But yeah, 50 whole episodes. Yeah, there are definitely podcasts where I get really into it. Like I listen to an episode, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I'm gonna go back and listen to every single episode before this one. And then it's like 200 episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm still in the midst of doing that with a podcast called Dr. Game Show, where I ended up like actually buying like a micro SD card for my phone so I could download more episodes and put them all on my phone. I'm still only like halfway through it, too, I think.
Yeah, I think the farthest I've ever gone with a podcast was 1 to 2 years back. But I don't know. Like I said, I've never really followed that many podcasts. But when the last Harry Potter book was coming out, I listened to the Pottercast pretty. I was pretty intense into that. So, but yeah, no, the only podcast I'm listening to right now is the Tough Pigs podcast, where they discuss the movie Muppets Take Manhattan 2 minutes at a time. So each episode is talking about 2 minutes of the movie. And it's just surprisingly addictive.
Okay, so how are you doing, Michael?
It's fine. Hey, that's the icebreaker.
Yeah, I got back around to it.
I'm great. It's been a crazy month, 2021 January. Oh man. For a while there was 2020 part 2, right? Oh no.
Yeah. Sometimes it still kind of feels like it is. But things seem to be getting better,
people,
right?
Yeah, I've got, you know, I've seen people say, "Oh man, it's so much better than I'm so glad last year's over." And then I see other people saying this is terrible. 2021, you're supposed to be the chosen one. You're supposed to be different. And you're just the same.
I don't know. At least I'm feeling vaguely a vague sense of optimism about the near future that I was not feeling 2 months ago. Put it that way.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah, so the other day, you streamed Life in the Dorms. It was the very first game that I worked on in any significant capacity. Came out originally in like 2011, 12, somewhere around there. I wrote it and designed it, and it's only very, very recently that it's actually playable on the PC. It's on Steam for free. And Michael did me the honor of streaming it on his YouTube channel the other day.
How
did you feel about that, Michael?
It was a lot of fun. It makes me wish I could make a game in that style. I wouldn't know how you'd write it or go about it, but I think I mentioned, like, in November when I tried to do writing an adventure game, I didn't know how to do any sort of adventure game writing or that sort of thing. Right. I feel like this game is very well designed. I think I even commented on it in, like, Chapter 4 or something, where it's like, there's a puzzle with every single character. I really like that.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of a nerd for structure like that. There's a couple of Nancy Drew games that way, too, where it's like each of the four characters has two puzzles for you to solve. And I don't know, maybe that's just something you don't notice as much as a player, but more as a developer. You're like, oh, I see how your script was probably originally written.
Yeah, I had a whole outline and everything. That was a very interesting design project because... I was writing and designing it as the programmer Ted was developing it, which isn't always how you and I do our games. It's usually, or at least in the last couple games, it's been like we get the script first and then program second. This was like he was programming it and starting to work on the art and everything, and we didn't totally know where it was going at that point, which is kind of a fun way to do it because you kind of... You get a greater perspective on, like, really what the game looks like and what the game can do and what makes sense in the game's universe that way that you don't necessarily get when the whole thing is still just in a design document somewhere.
Yeah, I really, what do you call it? I thought the ending was nice with the, what was it? Office Disorders? I feel like maybe I played the game in the wrong order and I was supposed to do that segment way sooner, but it was like the last segment I played in chapter 4 or chapter
That's
3
right,
or
yeah.
whatever.
It seemed like you were not feeling Office Disorders.
I was not a fan of Office Disorders at all, so it was weird. So I guess for people who haven't seen my live stream, go check out my live stream. It was great.
Definitely
but
check it out.
It's like we got thrown into a completely different game. And that does happen sometimes in video games where, you know, it's like you're playing a game, you're going along, it's cool. And then all of a sudden, why am I suddenly transported into a completely different video game?
Sure.
But in this case, literally transported into like a different video game.
Yeah.
You're playing as a completely different character, and it's got a completely different... Well, I wouldn't say completely different interface, but it is a different interface.
Sure, it adds, like, these kind of Sims-style meters to it, where you have to, like, make sure you're getting enough sleep and enough food and water and things like that. Office Disorders, by the way, originally was the programmer's, Ted Hung's. It was his first game, and I thought it would be fun to include kind of a nod to that. But playing it now, you know, some 10 years later, it does seem kind of out of nowhere. And also, like, I made the section in Life in the Dorms, like, basically a direct continuation of Office Disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really make any sense now because there's no way you can even play Office Disorders. It does not exist anywhere unless you happen to have bought it on Xbox 360 10 years ago and still have the hard drive. Like, it doesn't exist. It's a phantom game.
Yeah, so that was sort of the problem, because if you haven't played Office Disorders, I'm like, I don't know who these characters are or what's going on. But as I'm starting to say, I think it was nice how it came back around to that in the finale of the game. Like, oh, okay, now it works and makes more sense.
Well, thank you. Yeah. The whole structure of the game, it was basically designed to be a story about, this guy who's extremely anxious about going to college, afraid that he's not going to fit in, he's not going to be able to find any friends, and he's going to have a totally miserable 4 years. So it's sort of structured that you and the character Dak build your relationships with all of these individual characters over the course of the game. And by the end, you and Dak are basically in the position like, I don't even know why he was worried in the first place. This is great. All these people are awesome. It was kind of me rewriting my my early college experience to have a better ending, if I'm honest. But anyway, that's where the design came, where in Act 3 or 4 or whatever it is, where you have a puzzle you have to do with each specific character. And that's why I did it that way, because I wanted to make sure you had a time to really build your relationship, build Dak's relationship with each character on an individual basis.
Well, it certainly did feel like, what was it? I think it was the first chapter. I thought it was well structured, so I think Chapter 1 was just all inside your room, right? And then wasn't Chapter 2, like, inside your specific dorm? And then, let's say, the next major segment, you got to go up to the bottom floor or to the third floor. So the world kept slowly building, and I like that. Yeah. But there was a scavenger hunt, like, towards the beginning, where you sort of had to do something with all the various characters, too. And so the scavenger hunt you do later on is sort of reminiscent of that, and I thought that worked very well.
Yeah, and I guess it's not spoilers at this point. The game has been around for forever, so I did it that way too, because the person who designed the scavenger hunt in the beginning was also the person who designed the other scavenger hunt, and he did it for basically the same reason, so that's why there are so many parallels between them too.
I guess, yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Mm. I like that. I thought of that.
Yeah. Apparently when I write games, I actually do put thought into it sometimes.
Yeah. As I say, oh my gosh, there are like 15 different items, though, in the inventory. And that's sort of what I was struggling with. Since I couldn't for the life of me figure out how to get items or pick up inventory items or whatnot in the script.
Yeah, I mean, oh, wait, what do you mean when you're designing a script or in Life in the Dorms?
Oh, no, just designing the script even for, I couldn't figure it out. I think, what did I tell you, like, the only, like, inventory item puzzle I could think of was pick up item A and item B, use item A on item B to get item C, and that's the item you need. And that, it's like, and it's totally different in Life in the Dorms, where it's like, well, you've got, like, 15 inventory items, I think you only use each one once. I don't know. If I decide to speedrun the game, that's something I'd have to do, is inventory management. Because I noticed you only have the first 5 items that appear on screen at once, and so you'd have to pick up the items in a specific order. And that's the part of the speedrun that I actually kind of enjoy. It's kind of nerdy, but it's like, oh man, what would be the optimal strategy? I like the strategizing part. I don't like the part of, I just need to replay this level 50 times in a row until I, walk perfectly and save half a second.
Sure.
That's really boring to me. So I usually do it like 3 or 4 times, not 50. And then I just call it a day rather than going for best ever time.
Yeah, well, I bet you could get the best recorded time in Life in the Dorms if you wanted. I doubt there are any speedruns available at the moment.
Yeah, that's the easy way to get a speedrun record. is just play an obscure game.
I was going to say, one of the things we don't really do in the game, I don't think we really clear out your inventory all that much. So yeah, by the end of the game, you're definitely still like hanging on to a bunch of items that you've already used once and aren't going to use again. And I was actually looking at our old episodes when I was trying to figure out when we started the podcast, and that was actually something we talked about a while ago, was different ways to clear out your inventory, like in Curse of Monkey Island when you get eaten by a snake and you lose a bunch of items that way, stuff like that. And we don't do that at all, and I don't even, like, just ditch an item after you use it for the first time. I think I did it that way, one, because I wanted to have those options available. Like, maybe I, as a designer, maybe I would want to make an item a solution a second time later in the game. And also, it didn't even really occur to me to find a way to get rid of items.
Well, as I said, the five most recent items are the ones that show up, so that kind of solves the problem a little bit, because, yeah. I mean, if there's an item you picked up in Chapter 1, you're going to have to be scrolling through the inventory to try to find it again in Chapter 5.
I don't think I even ever noticed that it was designed that way. That's all Ted. I had nothing to do with the interface at all. That's interesting. Oh, I think I was going to say, too, I don't usually want to limit the inventory too much, because then I feel like it can make the puzzles too easy, because you might get to the point where, well, I have one item, and there's one thing I need to do, so I know I have to use that one item on that one thing, which is sort of the problem I saw. Sorry, this is getting a little off topic, but that's sort of a problem I've seen with, like, episodic adventure games before, the ones that are, like, super short,
mm-hmm.
and... you know, take place on like one or two screens and you only ever collect one or two items. I think it gets too easy because of that.
Well, I just played Love Chronicles 3. It's Love Chronicles Salvation. And Chapter 4 of that game has like the exact same problem. So like in Chapters 1 and 2, you've got 10 inventory items like the whole time. And then like Chapter 4, it's like maximum of 2 or 3 inventory items. And so it's ends up being the shortest chapter of the game because every puzzle is super easy because you've only got one or two items to use. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I could talk all day about best practices in inventory items in adventure games.
Well, it's I don't know how I would do that with a
yeah.
Gosh, I'm thinking of the escape room game. I don't know how to program inventories, really. I feel like if we were to try to make a big adventure game, we'd either have to use one of the, I guess, an adventure game engine, or if we're going to keep trying to do it in RenPy, I'd either A, look up to see how other people have done it, or B, just it's a separate screen. That's your inventory screen. I kind of hate having the separate inventory screen. But I feel like in RenPy, that would be the best way to program it.
Well, I think I know how to overlay screens on top of like the current background. Like we do that in Internet Court a few times. Like the court record at the bottom is its own separate screen that displays while you're in the court. So we could probably figure that part out. Oh yeah. Oh, there's a lot of multiple screens that display in Internet Court. The court record is a screen. I think, like at the top where it shows the number of strikes you have, I think that's a screen too. Actually, there's a couple screens. One for the strikes on top of the avatars on the left, and then one on top for the strikes on top of the video that's playing. Yeah, I think there's at least like three screens on the game simultaneously.
Yeah, because I feel like the escape room game. For those of you who don't know, it's sort of like an adventure game I tried to program in RenPy. I couldn't really figure out how to do it, and so it's just the bottom of the screen is... I mean, that's where the inventory is supposed to go, but it's just... I had to program each item individually and what the cursor might be touched. I don't know. I feel like I did it very badly, and it could be done much better. The person had a tutorial on how to do it, and I couldn't figure it out, actually. So
I'm actually already picturing something that I could do based on the Internet court record, where it's the same idea that I think you're suggesting, where you have like the bottom portion of the screen has a bunch of items that are make up your inventory.
Yeah, and you can click on them to view them or whatnot. Yeah, or use them on puzzles.
I'm thinking, like you click on one item and maybe that item just gets highlighted on the screen. Like, you don't even have to do the adventure game thing where your cursor becomes the item. You can just highlight that one and have that be the active item. And then you can set some sort of variable when you click it that says, you know, pi equals active item. Active item equals pi. And then you can set that when you click on other items, it can check whether you currently have the pi activated, or like when you're clicking on something in the background, it can check if you have the Pi activated and then run interactions based on that. I bet we could come up with something like that.
Yeah, that'd probably work. With the example, I think on the RenPy forums, it was they use some actual programming for Python for adding new inventory items, and then that was just nope, that was where I got stuck. But their example inventory is a very simple, like, adventure game puzzle. Like, okay, we need to grab the firewood from outside and then put the firewood in the furnace, or use the match to light it as well. So if we only have three items in the inventory in the game, it'd be super easy to copy paste. I know it was programmed to make it super easy to add extra items, and then like you said, the frame would do all the heavy lifting for you. So, but I just couldn't parse their programming. It just did not work for me. Adventure games, they're difficult.
That's why we make visual novels.
I do want to try to make more adventure games or other games. So I don't know if this is getting off topic or not, but you know, I was trying to think of an idea. I think I posted this on Twitter too. No, Twitter and Facebook. I'm like, boy, it'd be cool if I could make a game in the style of that Carol Reed thing, where it's just pictures. Right. The person takes pictures of real life locations. And I did a little bit of scouting. I've done a little bit of scouting out various places that are like historical of interest in Oregon City. And I've showed my family, and they seem to think it's cool.
I think a Carol Reed style game could definitely be done in RenPy. Let's see, add the arrows to move around. Everything's just like, each individual room is like a screen with hot spots on it. I don't know, I guess I didn't watch enough of the Carol Reed walkthroughs to really get a sense of how it works, but
yeah, a lot of the screens are just scenery with no hot spots. I mean, the only hot spot is like turn right and turn left. That's super easy.
Yeah, that would be extremely straightforward. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think you could do it. I think we could definitely do it if that's something we wanted to pursue at some point.
Well, I'll think about it a bit more and then send. I don't know if I've actually sent you any of my specs that I've written, but
it's gonna be fun when we decide what our next project is, and we just have like a pile of like a dozen different games to figure to sort through.
I've got a bunch of these specs. So I've got the spec for Francie Drew 3, Mask of Red Death, Story Savers, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, The Murder Man, and
Murder Man.
Trial by Hellfire was apparently something. I think this was a...
Oh, that's...
I sent that to you for you forever ago, yeah.
That was a while ago. Yeah, well, I think that's when we were still trying to figure out... No, I'm sorry, that wasn't... That had nothing to do with Internet Court. I'm sorry, that was...
2016, no, I think we decided to go with Internet Court as a different option.
Gosh, I forgot about Trial by Hellfire.
Yeah, told me to write it, so I just wrote like the first screen, I think, or the first
really
scene.
Good name.
That is just a great name. Yeah.
Yeah, I have on my whiteboard in front of me, I have it's like all game dev stuff, so I have like my main projects listed, and then I have other games that we've talked about. So I have what, Room Escape, Sexy Priest is on there, Running Club, Santa/Xmas Songs/Dating Sim. One I wanted to do was the Awkward Steve Duality. Different awkwards, which was going to be awkward Steve Duology was two games in one. So the Awkward Steve Duality was going to be one game in two, where you're playing two different games like simultaneously. That never went anywhere. Let's see. Save the Dates, Speed Hating. These are some good classics. And then the Weird Moms game, Christmas Carol Dating Sim.
Oh yeah, I've got the Christmas Carol Dating Sim here. So I've
that one is a winner.
I've got a two-page thing here. It's not much, but it's got all the major bullet points for the what this script would be.
That one is the winner. Dating the Three Ghosts. Yes.
Yes. My wife said Speed Hating sounds like it would be a great game, too. I mentioned that the other day.
Again, a really good name.
It's just the best name. But you said you were playing a game which sounded similar to that.
It's true. It's true.
So talk about this game. Let's hear more. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I'm playing, it's this game called Heartbreak High. It's a very short visual novel. It was part of the Itch.io social justice bundle. And it's sort of like the anti-dating sim. It's a breakup sim. where you have to break up with everybody in your high school. And I just think it's the goofiest thing. It's this interesting game where like you have 40 minutes of like real world time to play through the game and try to break up with everybody. If the time limit expires, like you're just done. And it seems like you get one shot at every character to try to dump them. A lot of it is like convincing them to break up or like trying to forcefully tell them that you're breaking up. While keeping track of a set of meters, like it tracks how mean you're being, and if you're too mean, you lose the game.
What? Oh, come on.
That's what happened to me. I was too mean in trying to dump people.
But you're supposed to be dumping people. You gotta be mean. That way nobody will want to date you. Oh,
it was too rude. And it also does a few mini games. I was describing these to my wife earlier today. There's this one wild sequence where you're trying to dump the track star, and at the top of the screen, like there's like a little like Atari track meet game where you have to like keep clicking to jump over hurdles as they scroll across the screen while you're still doing the visual novel dialogue choices at the bottom of the screen. It was very trippy. And the other mini game I saw, this one's a little gross. It's a makeout mini game.
Oh, great.
Where your head is on one side of the screen and the other person's head's on the other, and you have your two tongues coming to the middle.
No, what is this?
Yes. And you have to move your tongue so it touches their tongue.
It's the worst game ever. Oh, if you do it badly, do they break up with you? And
so I think maybe yes. I did a really good job, and then I couldn't break up with them because I was such a good kisser.
Oh gosh.
Anyway, yes, that's what I've been playing. Like I said, it's very short. I just played. I did a run like last night. Probably finish it tonight.
Feels like. Yeah, so anyway, just hearing about that yes. reminded me of speed hating, and I'm like, oh, in game development news,
yes.
I don't really have an update on Pride and Prejudice and Murder. The update is that, you know, I checked in with the other author, and they said things are on schedule, and I'm like, great, and so that's the update.
Awesome.
Eventually things will happen with that game. With the Kidnap Prom Queen, I was going to message... You messaged me a while ago, actually, in like July or something, when you played through the game and you came across typos or whatnot.
Yeah,
and so I, for whatever reason, on my calendar, had it to check now to see, hey, did they actually update the game? And it turns out they did, so that's great.
Oh, great. Cool.
So, I'm so glad I don't have to do anything. Yes. It reminds... I played the, what do you call it? The Exit the Game? So we played Exit the Abandoned Cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah, very creative board game. So eventually I want to, like, record my family and I, like, playing through the game and post it on YouTube. But yeah, there's very creative puzzles and stuff like that. But it reminded me of the Kidnap Prom Queen, where it's basically the setup is that you're trapped inside some sort of area. And then you just have to solve a bunch of puzzles to open the locks and escape. I haven't played the other Exit games, but it feels like that could be done with pretty much anywhere. Like, it didn't have to take place in a cabin. It could be, I don't know, like a high school or, you know,
oh, yeah.
an old castle.
Oh, I mean, there's a ton of them. I was going to say we played one that's in a castle. Castle, mansion, museum, might have been a theme park at one point.
Oh, that sounds like a boat. Cool one, yeah.
There's one on a boat or a submarine, maybe both. Yeah, my wife and I are really into the Exit series. We played a ton of them.
So maybe you might know this. Is there like is it possible like to return the game or give the game to a like there's like a store that does board games near us.
Yeah, you have to destroy components of the game to play it.
We purposely didn't do that, so for this one in particular, in Exit the Cabin, is like what you're supposed to do is cut out pieces of paper for a set of dominoes, I'm like, I'm not doing this. And so I just wrote out dominoes on a separate sheet of paper and cut those out instead.
Oh, we've never played it that way. We always destroy everything. That's the fun part for me. We've played a lot of what they call legacy board games. I've talked about on Twitter a few times Pandemic Legacy. Also played Betrayal Legacy, Risk Legacy. And that's sort of like how these games work, right? Is you play through a set story that takes place over a number of play sessions. And each time you play, you're like adding new stickers to the rule book, adding new rules that way. You're opening little boxes in the box itself that introduce new figurines, new cubes, new cards. And you frequently have to destroy cards as you use resources and things like that. You write on the board in Risk. We very memorably got to name all the continents of the world. I love stuff like that. Let me destroy all my board games.
Gosh, I think the only other... another writing thing I had an idea for was... I know we mentioned, like, an RPG, so I wrote out vague ideas for doing an RPG based on Hercules, so...
Okay.
I don't know if that'll actually go anywhere, but Hercules had... He famously had to solve 12 different labors, and so I'm like, okay, well, it's a game, we've got 12 different levels. That translates nicely, maybe.
One of us will have to learn RPG Maker.
Yeah, I know that there are... I'm sure RenPy's got a bunch of RPG-style games, right? I mean, RPG-style visual novels.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, or like... Hatoful Boyfriend has some odd, like, turn-based combat RPG portions of the game, I think.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just add that on to the lists.
Yeah, we're going to have to do, like, a whole episode where we're just going through all the game ideas to figure out what we want to do next. Someone was asking me about it. I think it was in a stream that I was sitting in on the other day. They wanted to know what we were doing next. And I don't know. I don't know yet.
I thought we were doing the Sexy Santa game. Is that what we're working on, or
is
no?
is that the official next game?
I don't know. Where are you on that?
I mean, I read the script. That's about as far as I've gotten so far. I'm not totally sold on the. I think you mentioned you were like intentionally writing it as kind of a bad parody, and I don't know how I feel about going down that route yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think we might need to work on the script more. But we did figure out the art. That was kind of fun.
Yeah. No. So I mean, that'd be great. If you have any ideas or
okay,
something,
yeah.
Just throw them over to me, and then I'll give it a rehaul.
Swamped.
Probably like Cat President. And there are definitely places where it feels like, okay, he definitely wrote this off the top of his head in one afternoon and never went back and looked at it again. So I'm sure there are different places like that. Where it has that feeling.
I'll try to make time to at least, like, give you, like, more specific ideas on where I might work on it more. I don't think I'm at the point yet where I can do, like, the line-by-line editing that I did with, like, Cat President and stuff, but I can try to sit down and be like, okay, maybe this is what we should focus on more. Stuff like
that.
Yeah,
that works for me. I don't know when on my, like, to-do list I'd have time to work on that. See, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like 6 or so projects. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And like I said, Pride and Prejudice is going to come in at any point soon, and then that's probably just going to force me to put everything else on hold just to work on that.
Yeah, like I was saying, I'm sort of getting bogged down with Internet Court. I'm starting to see the end of the tunnel, but I discovered some really nasty bugs at the beginning of this month. And I've been sort of been consumed by trying to fix it, which has slowed things down a little bit. In the meantime, when I was working on that, I really cleaned up most of my Internet Court to-do list. Like all the interface stuff I'm constantly complaining about is all done. There's like only a couple small things I need to do now before it goes out to the testers. Besides the bugs. There's like a sound effect I want to add, like stuff that's that small. So that's really exciting. I'm fingers crossed it'll be in the next few weeks that I'll put out a call on Twitter to looking for testers.
That's good.
Yeah. And I've started thinking about what a trailer for this game might look like, too. So I added the intro to case number one that you and I had talked about several months ago, where there's just like a tiny bit of dialogue, like at the beginning of like a Law and Order episode that sort of sets the stage for what this is. So I have that in the game now, and I was thinking that could just be the beginning of the trailer, and then there could just be like random dialogue clips from the game that are either interesting or funny or otherwise set the scene for the game. So as I've been testing, I've been trying to make notes of specific scenes that might work for the trailer. I haven't gotten that far yet, but I did write down like Diana's line of, "I think we know what really happened," would sound really cool in a trailer. And like clips of people saying objection, stuff like that. I think that'll be the next big thing after I send this out for testing.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. And then we'll have to start thinking about achievements, too.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there we go again. I mean, it'll be, what, one each for beating all the cases, maybe one... I added that stupid gavel thing that you can click on. I might add an achievement for, like, banging the gavel 50 times or something like that.
That sounds...
Anger management issues achievement. But yeah, that's sort of where that is right now. We're in a mostly good place. Just takes forever. I'm sorry. I try to go fast. It doesn't always work. It frequently doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that sounds like we've got a plan though. You'll just keep working on Internet Court, and then after that we'll probably decide our next projects, because we've got several we could choose from. I think it's the Sexy Santa game. The escape room game, the crazy mom's game, and then the Groundhog Day too, game. Though. I feel like those are the ones that are the most advanced / closest to. I mean, they're a lot more work done than say.
Than the games where all we have is like a funny title.
Where our good title are is like, okay, well, here's the Christmas Carol dating sim. Here's a list of scenes in a Christmas Carol. That's not as well advanced as Too Many Santas, which has an actual script.
All right. I'm gonna put it on my list. How about after I send this stuff out for testing, I'll have a nice pause for internet work for there. So internet court work at that point. So at that point, I can read over the Sexy Santa script again and try to come up with some more like more general notes for you.
Yeah, and then I'll do a rewrite or whatever. Yeah. And I'll think more about this Oregon Trail game with my family then. I don't know how many locations would be good for that game. Or I guess like a big scavenger hunt through Oregon City game. I don't know.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
I've only got like 15 possible locations, so
What are the puzzles in the Carol Reed games like? Is it like a visual novel? Is it like mostly dialogue, or are there like Nancy Drew style like logic puzzles in there too?
I think it's mostly like adventure game puzzles. One puzzle all the time is, you need to find the key, which is hidden somewhere, like behind a rock or something.
Okay.
Another common puzzle is like opening a locked case. So you need to find the password, which is 4532 or whatever the password might be. Sometimes it's a color. I'll just list the various puzzles here. You go into this kid's room and you find a card for the Green Tile Skate Park that lets you know you want to go to the Green Tile Skate Park. You go there, you find a piece of paper that indicates he likes the letters ALRQ. That was a graffiti tag he wrote, and so that's actually the password which opens up his dresser.
Mm.
And in the dresser is a card for the train museum. What you're supposed to do is go there and... there are like four different numbers spread across these various locations. So like one's in a circle, one's in a triangle, one's in a square. And you use those four numbers to open up the pass. That's the password for his computer. I mean, his tablet.
I don't know. It's not enough using frisbees to move refrigerators for my taste. I don't know.
This particular game does not have a lot of inventory items. So let me go with the inventory item puzzle. It also does the thing where you use an item once and then never again.
Yeah.
So let's see. There's a key hidden underneath a brick. And let's see. You get a wrench on the ramp. I forget where the wrench is used. Mm-hmm. I think the grabber is the only item you use more than once where you're just... It lets you grab items from far away. So you're given that item for picking up trash, but you also use it to pick up an item which is like trapped on the ceiling, which is that was actually a kind of creative puzzle.
Yeah. I don't know. It's all I'm so snobby about adventure game puzzles. I don't like it when it's like it's a very direct like you use the screwdriver to take the screw out. Like I like it when it's a lot dumber. Like and the game I'm sort of writing in the background right now, I don't know if this puzzle's even going to make it into the game, but you have to wash dishes, but the cabin you're staying in doesn't have any soap, and the water is, like, really dirty. So the solution is that you have to use the souvenir toothpaste that you got earlier in the game and rub it all over the dishes, and then you have to heat up a can of soda on the wood stove and then pour the hot soda on it to rinse it off.
They've had puzzles like this in the series.
I like my nonsense.
Their last game was just is more straightforward, so...
Sure.
It's, you know, the key opens the key. The skateboard tool is used on the... on the skateboard wheel. The handle, door handle is used on the handle. Here's one that's not. So a putty knife, you pick that off of the ground and you use that to pry open the heavy lid of something.
Okay. Yeah, I think I just like it when you use items for things that are absolutely not their purpose. I find that entertaining like 10 times out of 10 for no real reason.
There was a puzzle in the game where you have to improvise a bottle of rosé wine, and that just totally destroyed me because I'd never heard of some of this stuff before. So, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of that.
Yeah, and there wasn't like you look at a bottle to see the ingredients in the wine or anything like that. It's just you had to know.
You grab a can of cherry juice, and... I don't know. It's sort of complicated. One of the puzzles you probably like is you get a file and you use the file on a screwdriver to make it slightly smaller so it will fit in a door and you can jammy open a door. That sounds like a Paul puzzle you might like.
Now we're talking. Yes.
Yeah. So it's got two or three puzzles that would probably be like major Paul puzzles. But I think then all the others are. Like the, 20 sort of inventory items are generally just used as intended. So a key is used as a key. And a cleaning cloth, well, you actually have to find cleaning fluid to go with the cloth. But, that's used to clean off something that's dirty.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense. Like I said, I think I'm just a snob about this stuff. I've played too many LucasArts games and then games that evolved from LucasArts games. I love my wacky puzzles.
Yeah. It's kind of boring when this game has, how many keys? 4 or 5 keys, and they're all used as intended.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still thought it was an okay game. Yeah, it was pretty good. This one was themed basically on skateboarding, so like half the locations of the game are just various skateboarding places in I presume, the designer's hometown.
I don't know. I think I would play a game set in Oregon City or in the various places of the Oregon Trail. It sounds fun to me.
Yeah, not too many places in the Oregon Trail are in Oregon City proper, I think. So one of the cool places in Oregon City is... if we make a game, it's 100% going to be in it. But I think there are two places in Oregon City where they filmed for the Twilight movies.
Awesome.
So, the abandoned, this is an abandoned, paper factory. So they use that as the mill in the movie Twilight. So it's like, now it's gotta be in the game if we're making one.
And then you can get all the Twilight fans to play it too.
It'll be great.
Yeah. All right. Should we go into listener mail, listener questions?
Sure, let's go into listener questions. I think now that we've got like a good enough plan for what exactly it is we're going to be doing
this
for the
next month. This is good. I like
next
this.
Month. Yeah.
Anyway, we did get one very nice letter from a listener named Joey. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but Joey's been following us for many, many years. Like, he started watching your videos on YouTube, which got him to Game Cola's videos. He watched several of my walkthroughs on there, which is wild. I think I have, like, three of them. got into Phoenix Wright because of that. And then followed us to a podcast, and he said some really, really nice stuff about that. So Joey, if you're listening right now, I really appreciate that. Thank you. So here's an abbreviated version of the letter. Hoping this email finds you both well. I just watched Michael's live stream of Life in the Dorms and wanted to ask Paul in particular if any of these characters, particularly Brian or Winston, were based on your experience in the dorms. Were you also asked to do a whole bunch of team-building exercises before and perhaps after the school year began? Do you believe there will be a sequel, perhaps set during the school year, with The Revenge of Mr. Shirk? Love the podcast, love all your works over the past decade. Thank you guys so much, Joey. And I'm sorry, Michael, these are all sort of Paul-centric questions.
It's okay. So I think you mentioned that there was somebody like Winston, right? There was somebody who manned the front door of your dorm, right?
Yeah, it was me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, talk about how great that job was. That was
yeah,
the best
no,
job
oh,
ever.
Gosh. Oh, gosh, yeah. I could. Oh, man. Yeah, so that was a job I had during my junior and senior year of college. Was I was one of the people working the front desk of our dorm, giving people their packages that they got through the mail, and giving them keys and swipe cards if they lost their keys. And yeah, it was almost certainly one of the best jobs I've ever had, because almost all of it was just kind of sitting there watching wrestling and getting free pizza from drunk college students. Like, I would always try to take, like, the late shifts. Like, it would be like midnight to 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., and there would be nobody there. There would just be me just kind of, you know, eating candy, eating pizza, watching TV, and occasionally having to call 911 because a drunk person passed out in the lobby. But other than that, it was awesome. So that's sort of why I included the character of Winston, is that was such a big part of my college experience. I thought it belonged in this game. And yeah, so and kind of like Winston, I tended to take my job fairly seriously, you know, when there was actually stuff to do. And that's sort of where Teague, the copy editor, came from, too, as you might imagine. I'm sure a lot of you know that copy editing is sort of my day job. It's sort of what I've been doing basically since college. So that's sort of how Teague ended up there, and his frustration in editing the bad term paper was sort of me just getting a bunch of frustration out at dumb errors that I see all the time when I'm editing stuff. So really, a lot of the characters are me, inspired by the real life character person of me. Mm-hmm. Brian is not based on anyone. Brian is just a wonderful, extremely, extremely enthusiastic RA.
It does seem like that would be based on someone in real life. Yeah. But
no, none of my RAs were really that into being an RA, I don't think. Certainly not to Brian's degree. I mean, that's part of it too, right? Like, even the characters in this game that take parts of me, it's always like not just me, but it's me like turned up 1,000 degrees. Like, cause I mean, Dak is also me. All of Dak's insecurities about college was me. That's where it came from. I was the one who was, you know, not looking forward to college. I had finally hit my stride in high school, and now they were going to change everything, and all my friends were gone, and I had to hang out with all these awful drunk people throwing up everywhere. I didn't think my roommate was going to be a serial killer, but I did think they were going to be terrible. So you know, that's sort of how all that stuff ended up in the game.
Yeah, I feel like I think the first year that was the only RA that bothered to learn my name. But yeah, look at you actually hit a stride in high school. That's good for you.
I did.
I'm not sure I could agree.
It's funny, my junior and senior year of both high school and college were both like really good to me, and freshman and sophomore year of both of them were terrible.
Really? Because everybody says, like, junior year is supposed to be the worst or whatnot, so...
No, junior year is in both schools. That's when I started making friends.
You're there long enough to like, get a sense of how things worked. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Let's see. For Joey's other questions, the team building exercise, the scavenger hunt was totally made up, but the idea of these sort of get to know you games, that definitely came from my freshman year dorm, where like one of the first things we had to do when we moved in was they made us do this exercise where we had to go to our rooms and find the one item we would rescue from our dorm in case there was a fire. I think I grabbed, like, a stuffed animal. All the other guys in the dorm grabbed condoms because they were super funny.
Yeah, man, that's a joke. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that...
Everybody had the same joke.
There were a lot of people who had that joke.
Yeah.
You can see why I didn't want to hang out with these guys. But yeah, and the whole concept, like a lot of the game is themed around, or has the framing, I guess, of Dak just wants to unpack his boxes. And that was sort of my experience, like the first day of after moving into the dorms was every time I would go to open up a box, someone would be dragging me out of my room to make me do something. And, you know, I just wanted to set up my computer and I wanted people to leave me alone. And as for a sequel, I joke constantly about how I want to make Life in the Dorms 2 Death in the Dorms. But that's almost certainly never going to happen. I think Michael and I already talked in this episode about how neither of us would even know where to begin in making a 3D adventure game like this. I haven't spoken with the programmer on Life in the Dorms to any real degree in years at this point. And he also owns the rights, I think, to Life in the Dorms, technically. I'm sure if I asked very nicely, he would rubber stamp a sequel, but I just can't even, like, see a way we could do it without it being a totally different game. And if it's going to be a totally different game, it might as well actually be a different game, not just be another Life in the Dorms game. And, you know, as with so many things, it's not like it sold that great. Almost nobody's played the Steam version, so...
Oh, yeah, you could probably tell how many people have downloaded the same version. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even that, like, I also, you can judge this stuff just based on the number of reviews it has on the Steam page, even not looking at the actual stats, and it does not have very many.
I played it. I haven't reviewed it. I can give it a nice review.
If you wanted to, I would appreciate it. This is why I'm always telling people on Twitter to review our games. That stuff matters, not just for my ego, but also for visibility on Steam. The algorithm gods, they like it. They like to see reviews of games, particularly positive reviews.
How do I leave a review? Oh, no. Can't I just give it a thumbs up?
No, Steam. I think you have to say something, too.
Jeez. Well, forget that.
Exactly. Anyway, I hope that answers all of your questions, Joey. And once again, thank you so much for the email. That was awesome. You're great. So is everyone else who listens to this podcast.
Okay.
Are you reviewing my game right now?
I'm going to post my review. Yeah, here we go. Thumbs up. It's a nice review.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yay.
Now more people will find the game.
Apparently I played it for 6 hours, so, I mean...
Yeah,
that's,
was that like your longest stream of all time?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, uninterrupted stream, definitely.
Yeah. I felt bad about how long you had to... How long you were streaming for that. I did not expect you to go through the whole thing. It was cool.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be that long. So.
I'm sorry.
I'm surprised you said the game originally sold for $1. I thought it was going to be short, but no.
There was a whole thing. I forget why we priced it that way, but it was like it would either be like $1 or $5 or something like that, and we didn't want to go for the higher price because nobody ever buys the higher prices. Priced games on Xbox Live Indie Games, which is where we originally sold it. Something along those lines. It was something with how the market on that website worked. We actually did sell it, actually, a pretty decent amount of copies on Xbox Live Indie Games. It's just nobody on Steam liked it. Or played it, I guess. Anyway.
I guess nobody on Steam knew about it. I mean, that's true. I had too, so yeah. much trouble trying to get the controller to work. So the only reason I was able to get it was because I had an Xbox 360 controller specifically on my Christmas list. And somebody got it for me. And so I played the game. It's an Xbox 360 wired controller.
Yeah, I could do a whole another podcast about the problems with trying to get a PC version of this game. But we can save that for another time. All right. I think that about does it for this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefump, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Your homework this month, is to check out Life in the Dorms if you have a wired Xbox controller, or, I don't know, maybe it works with other controllers. It sounds like it probably doesn't, but it's free, so you should check it out.
It's probably just my fault that it didn't work with a random used Xbox controller that I got for free, so...
Yeah, I don't know. It's a whole thing.
You have, like, other Xbox controllers, right? Maybe? I don't know.
I've only ever used the wired Xbox 360 controller on my computer, though. I haven't really tried. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I don't have any systems after Xbox 360. That's the newest Xbox I have, anyway.
Well, I mean, it came out with Life in the Dorms, and then, like, how can you top that game?
So... Yeah, exactly. And they never made a sequel, so what's the point?
Yeah.
Oh no, I got lost. Okay. Our theme song is by Fifth Avenue. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our games specifically, we would love to hear them. Email them to podcast@orock.com. Is there anything you'd like to add, Michael?
Check out Life in the Dorms. Apparently that's the theme for the month, so...
Apparently,
that'd be a good game to play in February, right? I guess we should probably encourage people to play a dating sim in February. You can fall in love in Cat President, too.
That's a good point. We'll come back to Life in the Dorms in September. That's the time to play a game about moving into your dorm, right? Or maybe like the end of August, somewhere around there.
Yeah, we just need to make a game for every month of the year, and then we'll be set forever.
Oh, and then can we make a calendar that has like a screenshot of one of our games every month? That'd be so cool. Put that
I think
in the
right now the only one we've
shop.
Got is the Christmas. I think the Christmas one is the only game that.
Let's see, Awkward Steve's good for October. All right. Anyway, I need to end this now. Goodbye, everyone.
Awkwardtober. Yes, I like it. Okay, thanks for watching. Bye. Thanks for listening. Bye. Sorry.
A story will be told. Go!
Just got distracted because I think you use paint thinner as an item in Maniac Mansion. Just trying to remember what you use it for. Hopefully not for thinning paint. That's too boring.